I'm Liz Lowe, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. Do you know what satisfied me today, Andy? You should, because you helped influence it.
What?
Yes. I was incredibly satisfied by how well hashtag Kirk Trap trended on social media last Sunday, and it was all inspired by you.
Oh, that was great, actually. I appreciate you shouting that out. That was such a Kirk Trap of a game. And then he ended up with a moderately useful fantasy performance in another game in which he was absolutely miserable.
Yeah, but he made you work for it, and that is the Cousins way. All right, let's start looking at week 7's matchups. One big thing for each game. You all know by now, if you're listening, that we do more than one big thing, even though Brett would like us to do just one big thing. So we're going to get going. Pittsburgh at Tennessee. First things first, the biggest things, both literally and metaphorically, is a strength on strength matchup between Derrick Henry and the Steelers defensive front.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. This is irresistible force, immovable object stuff right here. This is one of the NFL's best run defenses. Pittsburgh allows just 3.3 yards per carry, only 66 rushing yards per game, only 3 rushing touchdowns on the season. Derrick Henry is like a juggernaut, utterly unstoppable, multiple touchdowns in 3 straight games. He is, again, the NFL's leading rusher. He's been a perfect running back so far. Maybe they don't throw to him as much as we'd like, but it's a little bit more than prior seasons. I can't wait for the matchup. I would never bet against Henry. It might be there might be a handful of 2-yard carries along the way, but I would still bank on him, I don't know, 80 plus yards, another touchdown, always a good shot at multiple touchdowns, because that's how they roll. That's the foundation of the offense.
Interestingly, on Mad Bets this week, I was asked whether or not I thought Henry would go over under 99.5 yards. And so I made the same points that you made, noting as well that only Miles Sanders was able to hit 80 yards rushing. No other running back was able to hit that total. The Steelers have yet to give up 100 rushing yards to a single running back this year. But Sanders did, if you remember, on one really long, lucky 70-yard run. And it just so happens, though, that what do we know about Derrick Henry? He is an expert at ripping off insane, unpredictable. I mean, he is the physical manifestation of an anomaly. That is just what you have to believe about him. And so I took the over because, like you said, I am never going to bet against him. He's my RB3 this week.
He's also good about breaking off those runs within the context of an already great game. So he's like rolling to 120 yards and then he breaks off the 90 yarder. Yeah.
Elsewhere within this matchup, we should talk about Deontay Johnson, who is back practicing in full. Now, there might be some squabbling as to whether or not this affects Chase Claypool, but I think we can both pretty much agree that Chase Claypool is the team's wide receiver one.
Yeah, I feel that way. This receiving core, actually, to me, and it's funny, I feel like I've heard from people on Twitter just in the last 2 or 3 days, seriously disrespecting every member of the Steelers receiving core separately, right? There's people who don't think Claypool can keep it going. There's people who are like done with Deontay. Oh my gosh, he's had multiple injuries this year. There's people who are fed up with Juju. To me, this receiving core is going to be a little bit like Dallas's with Andy Dalton at quarterback, right? Like, we like them all. It's going to be 3 guys who finish among the top 25 to 30 overall fantasy receivers by the end of the season. There's probably not going to be many weeks where all 3 of them go off, but it's a good bet that 2 will in any given week, as long as Ben is at quarterback. Because Ben's got, like, I mean, he comes into week 7 with, I think it's 11 touchdown passes, only 1 pick on the year. He has multiple touchdown passes in every game but 1. I mean, he's not exactly the Ben of old, but he's been great. The offense is humming. And then if you're worried about Deontay's snaps, I figure that he effectively steps right into the sort of role that maybe James Washington has had. And James Washington, over the last 3 weeks, 49 snaps, 53 snaps, 43 snaps. Like, he's on the field plenty. Like, there's plenty of opportunity for Deontay, Juju, and Claypool. But I agree with you. I think Claypool is well on his way to finishing as the top wide receiver on this team.
I think also Juju's ADOT is particularly worrisome. We talked about it. You and I went head to head, whether it would be Jamison Crowder or Juju Smith-Schuster, and I can't believe you won that face off. My God, because Jamison Crowder didn't do great, guys. but the ADOT for Juju is particularly worrisome, especially when we had a matchup last week against Cleveland, who gives up so much yardage in the slot, which is where we know Juju plays. So I am backing off of Juju, which is sad because I have a lot of exposure to him. And ranking him really is like a low-end wide receiver three until something else shifts. Let's move ahead to Tennessee, because I think we're all in agreement about the different pieces of Pittsburgh's receiving core. It is worth mentioning that A.J. Brown missed practice on Thursday with a knee issue, and that's important because we already know that he's missed 2 weeks with a knee issue earlier in the season. It's really tough because he is such a difference maker for this offense. Even though Corey Davis, right, he's been activated off of the COVID list, and it's another good sign that Jonnu Smith practiced in full on Thursday, so he should be good to go. But it just feels like, similarly how to the way we talk about DJ Chark in Jacksonville, he is the fulcrum under which all of this operates well, outside obviously Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I agree with that. Nobody just slides right into the A.J. Brown role. Like, there's some targets that are going to be vacated, but they aren't going to look exactly the same. Like, Corey Davis was not giving us an A.J. Brown impression exactly when A.J. Brown was out. That's just a dimension that the offense won't have, like a absolutely take the lid off the defense sort of situation. And we just don't find that with guys like Humphreys and Davis. Which is fine. The offense like could still roll a little bit with those guys, but A.J. Brown is a true difference maker, and I think Chark is a good comp for him. Hopefully he plays, right? Like, I mean, I want all elements of this game in action.
Absolutely. And you're mentioning his after the catch ability, and that's just the thing when you're dealing with Pittsburgh, because as Mina Kimes mentioned on Fantasy Football Live last week, the defensive front is absolutely brutal, but the secondary can be had. And when you look at Brown's after the catch ability, that is a receiver that can produce in this matchup. And the rapport between him and Tannehill is undeniable. So I think if he does play, like 4 to 5 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown is completely within the realm of reasonability.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely agree.
A game that is less exciting, unless you're an NFC East fan, Dallas at Washington. I don't think this is who cares territory necessarily, but there are some, this is where fantasy football becomes so exciting, right? Otherwise, nobody would care about this game. But when you have numerous teams on bye and you have COVID creating all sorts of chaos, and you also have invested in probably, as you mentioned earlier, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Dalton Schultz, now of Andy Dalton, this is the thing I'm most excited about for this game. Honestly, like, if you like real football and you like fantasy, watching Chase Young maul Andy Dalton all week long or all 4 quarters long behind that banged up offensive line is going to be your cup of tea. From a fantasy perspective, I think this makes Dalton Schultz an interesting play because, you know, despite the, it was so lovely at first to see the chemistry between Gallup and Dalton, but when you just think about logistically, if Dalton is getting hit all the time, if Andy Dalton is getting brutalized nonstop, then probably he's going to try to like heave it up to a big, obvious middle of the field target. And that has been Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, it's a good point. You got to get the ball out quick. Assuming that he's going to, as you say, he's going to get just ragdolled, sacked a handful of times in this game, right? Because Chase Young is unstoppable. And that should play well for the running backs, for Zeke out of the backfield, and for Dalton Schultz, maybe for some short range stuff to CeeDee Lamb. It would not figure to be a Michael Gallup game. These two teams are very difficult to predict. Like, bad teams meet and crazy stuff happens. I'm kind of just glad that this division plays each other at least for a weekend, so we don't have to see like these teams getting absolutely stomped by like real NFL clubs.
On the positive side for the Washington football team, it was nice to see Terry McLaurin get back to alpha status, good number of targets, back to being productive with Kyle Allen under center for 4 straight quarters. I think he can find the end zone again this week. He's obviously someone that you're going to start every week because he's dragging bad quarterbacks into production. And Kyle Allen in this matchup could be someone that you have to stream. Now, you know, by the way, like, I write the sleepers article for Yahoo every week and I do the fantasy damage segment on Fantasy Football Live. And sometimes in my feeds, just because of algorithms, I'll see other people's sleepers articles. Y'all, Justin Herbert is not a sleeper. Please don't tell me that Justin Herbert, if you can't write Justin Herbert is a sleeper anymore. Kyle Allen, if you look at a percentage rostered equation, is an actual sleeper. And I'm not going to try to convince you that he's a world beater. Like, you can make a bad decision along with him and review all of last year's tape. I don't need to do it for you, but he is the starter in a familiar system and a juicy matchup. And he was a top 12 producer at the position last week. So I do think he can finish inside the top 15 if, and if, only if you are desperate.
I love that you mentioned that, because I usually write about a quarterback in the pickups column. I feature at least one guy. And like, I don't like to make it somebody who's nearly 50% rostered, right? Because that means that in most pretty competitive leagues, they're not actually out there. So I chose to write about Kyle Allen because he's facing this like zombie defense, right? Like this absolute legit terrible. I can still see them all waving at Kenyon Drake as he ran into the end zone defense. This is a bad defense. It's a great matchup for him. Obviously, he's not a world beater. He was bad last year, and he's a pretty sketchy quarterback with a sketchy offensive line and all that. But the matchup is tremendous. It's as good as it gets. And so I write about Kyle Allen. I point out that he's 3% rostered. If you need a streamer in a deep league, this is probably your guy. And people come back with, well, I'd rather have Tannehill. Well, no, I would rather have Tannehill too. Everybody would rather have Tannehill. He's like 60-70% rostered. I can't go get Tannehill right now. I can't go get Minshew right now. I can't go get Bridgewater. You, I'm sorry, are stuck with Kyle Allen if you're streaming in a deep league.
Well, it looks like the New York Jets will not be stuck with Joe Flacco much longer, because if we are going to reach for silver lining, Sam Darnold was practicing again on Thursday, is looking good reportedly for Sunday, but it's the Jets. There's always a couple buts here. Mekhi Becton still limited. Obviously, he's the left tackle, right? So he's got the shoulder injury. Jamison Crowder Meeps has a groin issue. He was downgraded from limited to did not practice on Thursday. Chris Hogan's on IR with a high ankle sprain. That means, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, please. Paxton Berrios is your slot receiver for the week, which is, by the way, all that's going to be targeted. Don't even come at me about Perryman, because without Becton healthy and this Buffalo squad probably a little pissed, I don't really see who else is going to get the ball. I mean, other, obviously, than Frank Gore.
Yeah, this is such a wasteland. Like, I don't even want to talk up anybody on the Jets necessarily. There's no like hard recommendation here. I've seen a little bit of excitement out there for P. Ryan, who did actually outsnap Frank Gore in week six. So like, if you're in a point per snap league, go for it. But he's not getting the ball as often as Frank Gore.
And
Frank Gore is just never, ever going to go away.
Yeah, he got Gase a little bit, because Gase was like, yeah, well, I pulled him because I wanted to keep him motivated. No, that's not how you like Adam Gase is everybody's dad. Like, everybody who's gone to therapy because of their fathers is very triggered by Adam Gase right now. That's all I'm going to say.
Who isn't motivated by having opportunities taken away from them, right? For no good reason.
One last note. He's not fantasy relevant, but in case anyone is keeping track in a dynasty format, Denzel Mims is probably going to make his professional debut in week 7. On the Buffalo side of things, John Brown isn't practicing. He's been hampered with an injury pretty much all season. My boy Gabriel Davis did not get it going, because nobody really got it going in week 6 versus Kansas City. But that makes this a massive get right spot for Buffalo. So I am aggressively ranking Josh Allen also because of the matchup. Like, this is, you've got motivation. You've got, you are going to get so wasted on processed juice in this one that it'll be blackout awesome in the next morning. The only piece that I'm Cole Beasley, as you said last week, I mean, there you go, making good on all these bold predictions. He found the end zone. I will say that I'm a little bit worried about Devin Singletary. He's only had 3 targets over his last 2 weeks. Remember, we like to see him earlier in the season getting a lot of that work in the passing game. So I've downgraded him to like the RB18, RB20 sort of range. He hasn't been great over the past 2 weeks. And obviously, Zach Moss is back.
Yeah, Singletary is the one who really needs the get right spot, right? Because he's been a pretty significant disappointment, was a fairly significant disappointment while Moss was out. And now Moss is there to perhaps take some receptions, take some goal line touches. It would be great if, you know, if you've got any shares of Singletary, if he does anything here, he finds the end zone, he gives you 100 yards. I might take him to the trade market off of this.
Oh, all right. Well, that put a pin in that one, everyone. Andy is a much better trader than I am. Oh, my gosh. Did you see what Scott Pianowski fleeced me? And I just like laid over and was like, fine, have these players in one of our leagues. Like, I've given up. I mean, in that league, I've got like Chris Godwin. It was a fab league. Chris Godwin, Austin Eckler, and Dak Prescott, and it's 14 teams super flex. Anyway, nobody wants to hear about your fantasy team. What people do want to hear about is Michael Thomas finally getting on the field, and how about this for a 2020 tilt? He returns to practice. He's not hampered by the issue that initially got him. He didn't get into any more. He's not throwing haymakers against any more teammates. But then he tweaks his hamstring and was not available to the media on Thursday after practice. So he is legitimately in doubt for week 7 because this year is not predictable enough.
Whole lot of weirdness here. Whole lot of smoke here. He was already coming back from an injury where we almost never expect somebody to be fully 100% when they step back on the field again. But he did have the bye. I need him to go. I've held out and have managed to cobble some 3-3 records together on some Michael Thomas teams. I really need him to go in this one. I'm not super optimistic about it. I think people know by now and we've already had the Michael Thomas fire drill a few times. So it's Traquan, it's Emmanuel Sanders, and it's just like, this is such a blow up spot for Kamara anyway. It would just be even more so. Carolina has allowed the most receptions to running backs so far, the fifth most fantasy points to running backs, almost 5 yards per carry. Like, it's such an obvious blow up spot for Kamara, no matter who's on the field. But without Thomas, he could give you 200 total yards.
It's also really fun to watch Kamara and CMC battle it out for the title of the elite running backs. And it doesn't look like Christian McCaffrey is going to be back until after next week. So we're going to punt
Kamara, on Kamara, by the way, is on pace to make a run at McCaffrey's like running back reception record, which I think would be really fun.
Well, I think this is a spot where he can definitely gain some ground. You know, we talk about angry Tom Brady all the time. That's a trope. I am way more entertained by angry Aaron Rodgers. It like loads more entertained by Aaron because angry Tom Brady is like the guy that was always too cool for you in high school and you like had a crush on and he would just like brood at you and then walk away. And Aaron Rodgers is like the guy that would talk to you in woodshop but then still not ask you out. Like it's so deep, like just like a, oh, I love it. I can't explain it. If you've never been turned down by Justin Lattice in woodshop, then maybe you don't know what I'm talking about.
Have you maintained your woodshop skills, by the way?
Probably
you
not,
do a little amateur woodworking.
I have done a little bit of like refinishing of furniture, but not like sawing anything major. Have you?
So that class is paying off outside the rejection.
I'm pretty sure my mom's happy that I'm not bringing her any more like busted looking napkin holders made out of wood and varnish. But anyway, so we are anticipating an angry Aaron Rodgers after the entire Packers offense got stymied by the Bucks in week 6. Devontae Adams, I think, has an opportunity for a really gorgeous bounce back spot. I have him fearlessly forecasted for 9 catches, 114 yards and a touchdown. And I think that might be conservative.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I like the call on Aaron Rodgers. We're probably, you know, because I mean, it's early to take oneself out of the MVP race, but he's probably not he was in the first sentence of that conversation before, right, with Russell Wilson, and he's probably not there anymore. Had his first multi-interception game since 2017, which is kind of crazy. So huge bounce back spot for him, obviously. Yeah, 1, maybe 2 touchdowns for Devontae Adams. There's a little bit of an injury worry with Robert Tonyan right now, and we haven't, you know, obviously we haven't seen the game yet where Tonyan and Devontae Adams both do stuff, so that would be really nice to see. For those of us who picked up Tonyan somewhere along the way. This is also because I think, you know, Houston bottom third in the league against the pass, terrible against the run. Also, this is a great Aaron Jones game, but we could, you know, there should be enough offense here that we see a little Valdez-Scantling too.
I also think we could see a little bit of Jamal Williams if you need some help at running back. I have him in the low wide receiver, I'm sorry, low running back three area. It's worth mentioning, obviously, that even Jeremy McNichols, remember him from, remember he was that rookie who was drafted by Tampa Bay back in the day? He's the backup to Derrick Henry. And even though the time went in, the game went into overtime, he did manage like RB20-ish type finish. So I think there might be enough production because Houston is so bad against the run for Jamal Williams, who has been on the field for close to 50% of the snaps with Aaron Jones, which was, when both backs were healthy, the trend in 2019 as well.
Man, that game really wrecked the year-to-date stats against Houston. Like, they don't even seem possible anymore. Like, they're giving up 5.5 yards per carry now. They're like 177 or 178 rushing yards per game. Like, that destroyed them.
We should say some nice things about Houston, though, because this this is an offense with an incredible quarterback and some legit weapons. Will Fuller is the, you know, not by any means a copy and paste version, but the of DeAndre Hopkins, but the team's wide receiver one. I think this projects because we see Mike Pettine's offense continually lay down versus the run, a really good smash spot for David Johnson. Like, he's not the between the tackles grinder. We've talked about this, but he can exploit a soft matchup. So I think this is a good spot for him. I am more interested in some of these secondary pieces. So we know Will Fuller, we know David Johnson, Jordan Akins still not practicing. Darren Fells, meanwhile, has scored in back-to-back games, is terrifying and touchdown dependent as that may be. Like, he's still on that low end tight end one, like 11 to 13 radar now because of that. And I've got a lot of Brandon Cooks questions. And in this matchup, again, noting that the over-under is set at 57, I am advocating for Cooks' ceiling in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got Cooks now ranked as a wide receiver three, I think. But it's one of those situations where you can, you know, he's only a wide receiver three because you're concerned about the floor. But the ceiling is extremely high for Cooks this week. I like Deshaun Watson's playing really well. Deshaun Watson does not deserve the record that his team has. Like, he's still a really fun watch. This is a good offense. As you mentioned with David Johnson, he's just somebody who's been absolutely shut down by difficult matchups. And this is not a difficult matchup. Like, you want to have David Johnson rolling when he gets a defense that gives up like 4.7, 4.8 yards per carry. This is going to be a good spot for him.
Cleveland and Cincinnati, this is a rematch. Remember, these two teams met earlier in the season and Joe Burrow put up 3 touchdowns to Baker Mayfield's too. It feels like we have lived many lives, at least in the journeys of both of these quarterbacks since that time, though.
Yeah, it sure does. That was the game in which Burrow had what, like 90 pass attempts, some ridiculous total of pass attempts, I think. It was also the game in which Chubb scored twice, Hunt scored twice. Like, the running backs just went crazy against Cincinnati. And that Cincinnati run defense remains one of the worst in the league, giving up over 5 yards per carry. So it's clearly a great spot for Kareem Hunt.
It is a great spot for Kareem Hunt. I also think that, you know, Burrow is coming off of some underwhelming efforts in very difficult matchups. But the difference to me between these two teams is that you have one quarterback, you have two overall number one picks, right? So like that just contextualizes everything. And yet you have one of them who's being encouraged to throw the ball and the other one being begged not to. And that's just like such, I mean, along with the rest of 2020, such cognitive dissonance. Like, it is trying to like, I don't know how you advocate for Baker Mayfield at this point. You know, after, yes, he was hurt. Yes, the offensive line was banged up. Yes, the matchup was brutal last week, but also like it was such a spot for him to like show, and I hate this sort of like culture talk, this like leadership nonsense, but it was such an opportunity to allow him, even if he made some mistakes, to like let loose and to see what he could do and to lead the team even like energetically. And it just feels like everything is staying really buttoned up, and it is in such sharp contrast to what Cincinnati and is allowing and encouraging Joe Burrow to do.
I mean you said it really well. Like, it's disappointing that Baker Mayfield already seems to be in the sort of game manager phase of his career. And he's this young, but when things are like on schedule and on script for Cleveland, they want his pass attempts to be like 22, 23. Like, he's just not, even his multi-touchdown games are like 160 yards, 180 yards. You know, they're not weeks that help you as a fantasy manager. Mm-hmm. It looks okay when you look at the game log and okay, two touchdowns. I can live with two touchdowns, but you can't live with week after week of like 170 passing yards. And that is the kind of scenario that we have here. Like a really good week for Baker Mayfield and the Browns. Any timeout is like he ends up with 185 and a touchdown, and Kareem Hunt and some other running back do all the heavy lifting.
It's also worth noting that the Yahoo consensus, all of us have Joe Burrow ranked pretty significantly ahead of Baker Mayfield, which I don't know, it's telling for a rookie. Joe Mixon was a little bit banged up in practice on Thursday, so keep an eye on that. But obviously, you know, you like the volume that you saw. The matchup is tough, but I don't think that any of us are in a position of luxury to sit him right now. Just maybe anticipate a bit of a downgrade, assuming he'll take the field, but not at 100%.
Yeah, that all sounds right to me. It's an encouraging sign that he actually returned to the game last week after checking out with injury, and he was questionable, and we were wringing our hands, and then he came back and appeared to be fine.
Detroit at Atlanta, over under is 55 on this one. This is like the quarterback redemption tour between these two. Isn't it lovely to see you've got Kenny Golladay going against Julio Jones, who did receive a little bit of a designation for his hamstring issue, though after last week, I don't imagine any of us think. Some of us might have sat Matt Ryan thinking he might be a bust, and then Julio Jones was not, in fact, healthy, and we learned our lesson. So I am definitely rolling out Julio Jones, and I think he goes over 100 yards in this one.
Yeah, that's a good call. He looked fantastic last week. Atlanta is basically going to play out their entire season now with a whole bunch of games that fantasy managers get super excited about and are of very little consequence in reality, right? Like there's no reason you'd be all over this game as an NFL fan, but as a fantasy manager, this is ideal. Atlanta ranks 31st in passing yards against, giving up like 335 per week. They are dead last in yards per attempt. They're last in passing touchdowns allowed. Like this is a blow up spot for Stafford. Shouldn't need to convince anyone that Matt Ryan is in a good spot against Detroit's defense too. Like what'd you say the number was in this one? 53? Like the 55. Over feels right. 55. The over still feels right there. Like one of these teams is scoring 35 in this game.
One last note for our DFS enthusiasts. DeAndre Swift is only $20 in our daily game, which I think is a pretty nice value considering that there seems to be a bit of a sea change finally occurring in this backfield. Are you buying into a Swift change, if you will, or do you think that it's going to revert back to, as Tank likes to say, I can't do it. Do you think it will revert back to, I can't do it, the Adrian Peterson-led backfield?
I love that you mentioned Swift, because this is just, even if he doesn't, you know, sort of ascend to this alpha role in the backfield, whatever. And I do think that Adrian Peterson is going to, I mean, he's going to stick around. Adrian Peterson's going to be like 12 to 14 carries a game, probably for the rest of the season, as long as he's healthy. But Swift has had that primary receiving role out of the backfield, and this is a golden matchup. Atlanta allows the second most receptions and the second most receiving yards to running backs. Running backs have been getting them all season as pass catchers. It's a great spot for Swift. Obviously, you just saw 14 carries, which I think was his single season or single game high so far. He doesn't need that to be successful here. If he just gets 6-7 targets in this one and 10 carries, that's going to be a big day for Swift against Atlanta.
We just wanted to say thanks again to our sponsor for this episode, Planters. When you want to satisfy a salty craving, Planters has you covered. Their deluxe mixed nuts are roasted to perfection and seasoned with sea salt, giving you the crunchy texture and enhanced flavor you crave. Stay satisfied with Planters Deluxe Mixed Nuts. We got some news, Andy. Let's get into this news. Tampa Bay at Las Vegas. Everybody very excited for this matchup. Oh, but there's a twist. It was moved from Sunday night to the late afternoon because... Oh, we've been waiting for this. We knew it was going to happen. We talked about this exact positional group being one of the most vulnerable to COVID. Yeah. The entire Vegas O-line isolating due to COVID exposure. Apparently, right tackle Trent Brown kicked it off. And now you've got Gabe Jackson, Denzel Good, Colton Meyerland, and Rodney Hudson all joining him.
Yeah, if this had happened later in the week, like somebody gets diagnosed later in the week, it's hard to imagine how a game could possibly happen as we speak. I think there is a sort of narrow lane where this game can happen if these guys are negative on Sunday morning, and then like if any of them are positive or can't get cleared for this thing. I don't know that it gets moved. I mean, Vegas has already had its bye. They do have reserve linemen. It would just be a terrible situation for the team. This is the first we've seen of this, but it's probably not going to be the last, right? Like if somebody is COVID positive and they're in a position room, like that, I mean, this is what's going to happen. It's almost a surprise that it took until week 7 for this to pop up. It's like, this was always going to be, I mean, I'm pivoting to like the actual fantasy analysis of this, but this was always going to be a terrible matchup for Josh Jacobs, right? Facing the best run defense in the league, just a fierce defense overall. Now to do it without, we don't know how many linemen are going to be missing. Maybe five, maybe maybe one, maybe five. We don't know, but it's bad.
It is extraordinarily bad, especially because it's also bad for Derek Carr, right? Like,
yeah.
Can you imagine the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, how much they are licking their chops at the thought of this matchup? They already have 22 sacks on the season. That's like 4 per week, right? Like, so I think if Vegas is interested in player props, maybe over under 6 sacks for Derek Carr. And I'm not sure I'm convinced of the under, despite the fact that he's the most he's had all season is 3.
Yeah, and that, like, it's an offense that had just opened up so many fun things with Henry Ruggs getting back and this vertical dimension. There's not going to be time for any of that. Henry Ruggs has no chance to do a thing. Like, Derek Carr is never going to have 2.5 seconds to throw. So the ball's got to come out quick. It's got to be one of those Waller games. It's got to be there's no time for Aguilar and Henry Ruggs doing deep things. Like, that's just not going to be there.
No, and from a Tampa Bay side of it, I mean, we should mention that Leonard Fournette is practicing, though he did practice 2 full times ahead of being inactive last week. So this just seems like Ronald Jones and Rob Gronkowski, really.
Yeah. And man, Ronald Jones has been, I mean, Ronald Jones has been really good. Like, he's averaging almost 5 yards per carry, rushed for 100 plus yards in 3 straight games. Vegas is already giving up the 3rd most fantasy points to opposing running backs. It's a blow up spot for Jones. He's playing great. He's on pace for, I think, 40 plus receptions on the season. So he's doing a little bit of everything there. You know, Ronald Jones is also that guy where, like, just when you think he can't possibly fail you, something happens, right? Leonard Fournette gets a weird number of carries. That's happened before. But now that we're 3 games into Ronald Jones's period of dominance, it's hard to imagine that it won't continue here.
And I don't think, like, similarly to the way we saw the game go against Green Bay, like, there isn't going to need to be a lot of passing here. And it's, you know, like, the Raiders don't have much of a pass rush anyway. So I think the question is going to be, does Tom Brady want to, like, feel himself a little bit and just put up like a 50 burger and Belichickian style, like, just go ham? Or does he want to allow the defense to continue to be the engine of this team and just hand the ball off and get the whole damn thing over with as fast as possible?
Yeah, Brady put the ball in the air 27 times last week, and 15 of those went to Godwin or Gronk. Good to see, you know, Gronk super involved. They rarely let Mike Evans go 2 weeks in a row without huge opportunities. So I would expect him to get his this week, especially if this is as one-sided a matchup as it could possibly be. I don't know that Tampa Bay is going to need to get to 50 in this one or get to 40 right in this one. I think the mercy rule, if there were one, would perhaps come into play here.
The only reason I'm like even wondering about it, the involvement of the rushing game of Ronald Jones last week, was a little element of additionally, yes, not needing to pass because Tampa Bay was so dominant, but also, and because the game script didn't necessitate it, but also playing keep away from Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, the talent differential between Carr and Rodgers is obviously vast. And so I have a feeling that this is Tom Brady showing off for like the first quarter and a half, and then just kind of coasting it out for the rest of the effort, maybe a pop here and there in the third quarter, just to remind everybody that he's the GOAT.
We're speaking about this as though there's absolutely no chance that the Raiders offensive line is capable and available for this game. And they could be, like, it's still possible that, let's say, four linemen are there. Of course, they won't have practiced all week. They won't have, you know, they've basically been in Zoom meetings all week with their position coach. So that's not ideal. But the team is well rested. They're coming off a bye and all that. So if these guys can get cleared, we might actually have a somewhat competitive game.
Oh, wait, one more, Andy. We forgot to mention that Jonathan Abram, the safety, is also on the COVID list. So, like, Gronk all day.
Yeah, yeah. And Gronk is coming off, I think it was an 8-target game. Like,
yeah.
Gronk is a plug and play tight end here for sure.
All right, we have talked entirely too long about a game that may not get played. So let's move along to a game that will get played, but I don't know if anybody really cares. It's Jacksonville at the Los Angeles Chargers. So to me, the interesting pieces about this game are that the Chargers defense is getting healthy again. And that's exciting to see. Melvin Ingram will be back. They've got another defensive tackle that's coming back. So the matchup now for James Robinson, who has underwhelmed in back-to-back efforts, becomes even more difficult. And Gardner Minshew, who has had his own set of struggles, also now has like a real pass rush to contend with.
Yeah, this is a good spot. And you probably had to grab them off waivers, but this is a really good spot for the Chargers defense. And they were widely available. They had been on a bye. So anybody who had them probably dropped them going into their bye. They were, I want to say, only about 30% rostered coming into the week. So they're a great fantasy start. Like, I think Minshew can make a little noise on volume here. That is probably the way it would have to happen. It's not a great spot for Robinson. I would suspect that the run gets away from Jacksonville a little bit in this one. And so we'll be relying on Minshew to put the ball in the air 40 to 45 times. Chark, in a week in which we worried about him even being available, saw 14 targets. So that was a really good sign. Like, I think he's a fair play against pretty much any secondary, pretty much any cornerback matchup. I'm trusting him, but beyond him, there's not a lot to trust on the Jacksonville side.
On the Chargers offense, last we saw this backfield, right? There was, I was advocating for Justin Jackson, but none of us really, really knew whether it was going to be Kelly or Jackson who were leading the charge. Jackson, from a production and frankly, just a, I don't want to say talent, but a experiential level, looked much more the 1A option in this backfield, though, you know, there's been a bye. We don't know what Anthony Lynn's intentions are. We know that he is a coach that has played the position, and so he has a particular fondness to it, and we know that he really likes the rookie and has talked up the rookie. It's obviously a great matchup for both of them. Are you leaning towards one more than the other?
Yeah, I'm leaning heavily Jackson. And we talked about this a little bit on Fantasy Football Live. I think I'm going to throw him in the bold prediction segment a little bit later. Like, this job became Jackson's in the Monday night game. I mean, he out-snapped, out-touched, out-gained Joshua Kelly, who hasn't been super efficient this year. I think Kelly maintains a role that's going to be there all year. It's going to be there when Eckler gets back. They still like him in short yardage, which is good because he only ever gains short yardage, right? Like, he's like a 3 yard per carry guy right now. Can catch the ball a little bit, but Jackson just saw so much greater volume in that last game. I think it was 20 touches to 12, something like that, and now gained him by over 50 yards. And I mean, over the course of his Chargers career, he's like a, you know, he's been hyper efficient. We haven't really seen him that often as a full workload guy, but he can do it. He was an absolute workhorse at the collegiate level. There's no reason I think he can't do it for, I don't know, a month more until Austin Eckler gets back. I think he's pretty solid RB1.
All right, well, go ahead and save the boldness for later in the show. But I agree with you. I have him ranked. I have him ranked similarly, although if you're recommending him for your bold prediction, I don't know if I want that that hex on him, because I know.
I've been wrecking players. It is something I may pivot to, like, I may pivot. I may have to pivot, because I don't want to doom him, because I actually need a big week from him.
And so
I've been a dark shadow over, like, all of the players that I have been hyping in any bold prediction segment. I am the worst.
You're not the worst. You are, in fact, one of the best, but it has been uncanny. Let's talk briefly about Keenan Allen, because last we saw him, he was scoring a touchdown and then exiting the game with what we now know to be back spasms. He had the bye. He is assumedly healthy. He's expected to play. Like the matchup for him. I think he can clear 80 yards, probably find the end zone as well in this one. So don't worry about firing Keenan Allen up. Do you disagree with that at all? Which you are more than welcome to do. Go ahead and hex him.
No, I certainly don't. His three previous games, he'd seen double-digit targets, including a 19-target game. Like Justin Herbert knows who his best receiver is. Like, it doesn't mean that he can't coexist with Mike Williams. Mike Williams can do great things on 5 or 6 targets, but Keenan is basically locked in for 10 or 12.
San Francisco at New England. I don't really have a lot of specific game notes other than wanting to see Cam Newton rebound, but recognizing this is a difficult place to do that.
Yeah, it is. The first thing I wrote down for this game is that, and I'm not tied to Julian Edelman in very many spots at all. I don't know if I have him anywhere. He's the wide receiver 48 right now. like Julian Edelman has been outside of the Seattle game, in which he actually dropped a touchdown that would have turned the game around. That was most of his fantasy production for the season in that one game. He has been crazy quiet. And we need to see a little something from the receiving core. Some of that's on him. Some of that's on the receiving core generally. Some of it, I'm sure, is, you know, Cam coming back from the break and from the COVID list of all things. So, but yeah, this is not a great spot. We've seen basically the one binge game against San Francisco, Ryan Fitzpatrick randomly just going supernova against them. But it does remain a difficult matchup. So I don't love it for Cam. I don't think Edelman is startable anymore.
I mean, total of 7 catches over his last 3 games is brutal. I was on Fearless Forecast for wide receivers this week, and I only have him forecasted for 4 catches and 46 yards.
Yeah, that would be a lot based on his recent standards.
Right. Let us move to Kansas City at Denver. Couple of news notes. Noah Fant practiced in full on Thursday, so he should be good to go. That's exciting. KJ Hamler, still limited in practice. He's been dealing with that hamstring issue. I have a bold prediction a little bit later about Tim Patrick, so we're going to put a pin in that. But, you know, if I am going to talk up Kyle Allen as a very deep potential fantasy damage play, then, man, if somebody scooped you and you aren't able to get Kyle Allen, like, I guess you kind of got to lock it up with Drew.
It's not a perfect spot for Drew Lock, right?
No.
Like, Kansas City has the league's number 3 pass defense. They've been very generous to opposing running backs because, like, Kansas City just sort of knows that you're not going to be able to beat us by running the football. Like, run all you want. You're not going to get to 40 points by running the football. And Kansas City has been pretty stingy to opposing passers. Tim Patrick, though, has you name dropped him there, has been like, it's nuts that he's had this 3-game streak, you know, 3 games with either 100 yards or a touchdown or both. He's done it with Driscoll and Rippon and Drew Lock. Like, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It doesn't matter if the opponent is New England. Like, it just doesn't matter. He's been completely quarterback and matchup proof so far. So I love that call. He's probably the fantasy play on Denver side that I feel most confident in.
Which running back do you feel more confident with, though? Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Le'Veon Bell?
This is going to be our first look at it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I was listening on the Yahoo football podcast with Charles and Therese. Therese, obviously, really close to this situation, really close to the team. And he has been super gung-ho on Edwards-Helaire, which I feel like he's kind of nailing this. Le'Veon Bell may have a role at the goal line. Le'Veon may have a rotational role. They're obviously not, you know, they didn't throw a bunch of years and a whole bunch of money at Le'Veon Bell. This is just a kind of a cheap and free look for the Chiefs. So I can see him, you know, he's huge, right? He's like 6'4", he's 220 something, 230, massive player. So although Andy Reid, when he had a player of like Jamal Charles used to get the ball at the goal line for Andy Reid, he didn't care about having like some big hulking back trot onto the field at the goal line. But that would be a role where I can see Le'Veon Bell thriving and poaching a bunch of annoying fantasy value. Sort of that Damian, you know, they were just really comfortable with Damian Williams near the goal line. I could see that. I would be very surprised if Le'Veon is getting more than 8 to 10 touches a game. that can make you a flex in an offense that averages 35 points a week, though. So like, that's fine. But I wouldn't expect more than that. And I think CEH is still the guy.
I 100% agree, especially after his effort in week six. I mean, if you watched that game, and I don't know what else anyone had to do at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the West Coast, at least. I watched every damn minute of that game. And you saw why Edwards-Helaire was drafted in the first round. I feel like existentially speaking, this is Le'Veon Bell, who has historically been about the money, taking a moment to say, oh, I did that. And you know what? I was miserable and I have enough money. And now I just want to be a winner. Like, I just want the opposite experience of the past, what, year and a half, 2 years. Like, I it just would be nice. Yeah. You know, I don't mind. I'm not going to end up looking as bad as LeSean McCoy did. So I'm cool with it. Like, and I think that I agree with you, is the shift. I still have Clyde Edwards-Helaire ranked inside my top 12 at the position this week. He's not in the top six, you know, he's not in the top eight, but he is in the top 12 for me. He's a low end RB1. And I think you're right that Le'Veon Bell is probably going to get some run, but he is not going to have, because of the offense and the quarterback that this backfield is attached to, he is not going to completely siphon away all of Edwards-Helaire's production and opportunities.
It's going to be huge for Le'Veon's future market if he can just, you know, if he can be associated with winning, with doing whatever a coaching staff asked of him, with taking on a lesser role, with just, you know, being like a productive part of a team that can win at the highest level. That would be huge for him, because obviously the general reputation that, like, your first thought about Le'Veon Bell right now is he wants to make sure that he gets every possible mm-hmm. touch, and he wants anybody should want every possible dollar. I don't begrudge anybody for that, but like, he wants everybody's touches, and like, he's on a team where you're not the center of the universe anymore. This is Patrick Mahomes' team for sure, and you've got another talented back in the backfield, and they're just all about winning. And if he can contribute to that, it's a huge thing for his future.
Absolutely, nice hive. It's a brand reboot. I agree. So I think probably the broadcasting world is excited by the switch to the Seattle at Arizona Sunday night game. I mean, this is a much more appetizing primetime offering than, no offense, Vegas and Tampa Bay. We are going to see Russell Wilson returning from bye, and we're going to see Arizona fresh off of their licking of the Dallas Cowboys. I think this is a really exciting matchup. Like, I am all in on so many pieces. I want to start from Arizona. It was lovely to see Kenyon Drake. Yes, of course, the matchup had something to do with it, but it was lovely to see Kenyon Drake hold on to the momentum that he had established the previous week. It was lovely to see Christian Kirk continue to build. I mean, Christian Kirk, to me, I've met him a couple of times, and I really loved him coming out of college. I loved his tape, and we all believed that he was going to be the heir to Larry Fitzgerald's slot throne, right? And maybe discounted his physicality and ability on the outside because of his size. And yet it's wonderful to see him excelling. Volume is not huge, but it was great to see, as the broadcasting team mentioned a couple of times, this Cardinals offense tweak the different pieces of this offense and discover and experiment throughout the game, which is something we don't like often get treated to.
It's funny, Dallas is so bad that the Cardinals left like two touchdowns on the table. Like, they left points on the table in that game. They took some deep shots really early to Andy Isabella that were just, they were just missed, that like, those definitely could have hit. Like, it was fun. And Christian, you mentioned Christian Kirk, the catch he made on the long touchdown did not get enough credit on the broadcast. I thought, like, it was a good throw, but he had to reach. And it was like a fingertip catch. And he should have lost his balance. I'm not sure how he didn't. I'm not sure how he managed to catch that without diving and face planting. Like, it was a hell of a play. He's good. You mentioned it. He's not actually getting a ton of targets. He's averaging less than five targets on the season. But that might not. Well, first of all, that there might be more there against Seattle, because this should be just a back and forth absolute shootout of a game.
Yes.
And it just might not matter, because Seattle has given up so much to opposing wide receivers. Like, even having had their bye, they have allowed on the season over, like, they've given up the most yards and most receiving yards to opposing wideouts by like over 150. And they've already had their bye. Like, that's just like raw yardage. So there's a huge opportunity here, not just for Hopkins, but for Kirk, for Isabella. This could easily be like a 38-35 sort of game. I can't wait for it. You're totally right. I'm glad that this is the Sunday nighter. I'm glad that this is an island game. This is going to be really fun.
Over under is 56 on this one per BetMGM currently. And you're right. Seattle is averaging over 376 receiving yards. They're giving up an average of over 376 receiving yards per game. We love that because it means that Russ is going to keep cooking too. And we love to see Russ in the kitchen. My goodness. Keep it going. DK Metcalf, like, set the Twitter world on fire, right? He's everybody's wide receiver one. We still like Tyler. I'm still playing Tyler Lockett in this one. I don't care, especially with the ping pong carnival type quality that this, of the potential of this matchup. I will say that, like, Tyler Lockett's end zone appeal, like, might be, or his red zone appeal, like, it might come down a little bit because obviously Russell Wilson is one of the most electric rushing quarterbacks and he's in good company in this matchup, right? With Kyler Murray. And DK Metcalf has just been absolutely becoming and evolving beyond the go route specialist that we anticipated. Not we, but like that many scouts just kind of wrote him off to be, that would be his ceiling. So I think Lockett, like, you're going to have to worry about the touchdowns are going to come down. And they were probably inflated last year, now that I'm thinking about it, because Doug Baldwin had that early retirement. And so Lockett, like, moved into that role earlier in the season. But that doesn't mean that he's not still an absolute technician who can smoke after the catch and put up yardage.
I also got to say, there's people. So I've seen this on Twitter and did a radio interview today with ESPN Rochester where they were talking up Antonio Brown and Antonio Brown's potential impact in a month or whenever on Seattle, if he ever lands there, because there was the Schefter report.
Right.
Never mind that, you know, but like the same report was out there in like August and September. Like, he's been linked to Seattle for a while. This isn't new, but people got so excited about that I'm fielding questions about whether Tyler Lockett's fantasy appeal is about to crash and whether I should deal him. Like, I mean, first of all, Russell Wilson can support like four viable wide receivers right now. He's great. Like, Brown wouldn't crush the value of DK Metcalf, who's like a top three fantasy receiver, and certainly wouldn't crush the value of Tyler Lockett, who is absolutely great and has mind meld with Wilson. Like, it would all be fine. So this is a long way of saying that I think both Metcalf and especially Lockett are potential trade targets right now. And I can just tell you, because I've heard their complaints, people are worried.
Ooh, I love that. We should end. I mean, that nugget and the crescendo of this game closing out Sunday night should be where we end. But nah, we got to wake up with a hangover and head over to Los Angeles because they're hosting the Bears. I should be more excited about this game. This is kind of a losable, but it's hard to get up for after Seattle at Arizona. I think that probably Kyle Allen has a shot to like outproduce Jared Goff this week. Like, if I was asked for another bold prediction, I talked about Kyle Allen. I think that he would be that Goff would be the player that I would like look to see Allen bumping ahead of, unsurprisingly, in my rankings. Chicago's defense is obviously amazing. Nick Foles isn't throwing the ball a ton. Jimmy Graham remains like another tight end stream. We talked about it a lot last week. He didn't find the end zone last week. Instead, it was Cole Kmet, but he did see something like 8 targets, which was his highest of the season. Yeah. So keep him in play. He's obviously a tight end one, he's owned in under 60%, or I'm sorry, rostered in under 60% of Yahoo leagues. Otherwise, when we're looking at the fantasy pieces here, it becomes a bit of a headache.
Yeah, these are legit very good defenses with like top shelf defensive playmakers. These two teams rank second and third in the NFL in terms of fewest yards per pass attempt allowed. Like, they're just, I mean, they're just really good. There's not going to be a lot of opportunity for anybody here. We learned a little something about the Rams backfield, I thought, last week. Like, Henderson held onto it pretty much fully, split snaps roughly with Malcolm Brown. But the important thing was there's no Cam Akers. Like, Cam Akers wasn't really a part of it. I would be very surprised if Cam Akers, basically off of having no involvement, has a ton of involvement in a Monday night game against a great defense. I doubt that's going to happen. So go ahead and roll with Henderson because the touches are going to be there. I think David Montgomery, while never being an exciting start, is a viable start here because he's getting targets in the passing game now. It's 19 or 20 targets, I think, over his last 3 weeks. So without Tariq Cohen, there's always a little bit of pass volume there. So that's going to help support his value a little bit.
I get a lot of questions about Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. Which of these two Rams receivers to start? Who am I prioritizing? And for so long, the narrative was obviously that Cooper Kupp and Jared Goff had this mind meld connection, right? That Jared Goff loved to trust and pepper Cooper Kupp, especially in the red area of the field. And I always resisted that because trends change, right? Schemes change. Like, this is all an ecosystem and it's all generally related. And something that you have always preached that I have remembered is that talent is the tiebreaker. And I believe Robert Woods to be a more talented, especially if we're looking at versatility, player. And he can do more things. And you're seeing that, right? You're seeing him be used out of the backfield. You're seeing him run in touchdowns. You're seeing him. We knew previously that he could work outside and move into the slot. And I think that maneuverability is what is keeping his fantasy stock buoyed. I do think it's likely he finds a touchdown, even if volume isn't leaning his way. And when you look at the matchup and recognize that it's quite difficult, but like, it would not surprise me to see Robert Woods yet again save his fantasy day with a touchdown. Not that that's particularly comforting to anyone starting him, but you know, if you're breaking ties, I'm leaning towards Woods.
Yeah, those guys have both been so dependent on yards after the catch, and they've been great. Like, they're near the top of the league in that category. But Goff, I feel like maybe we talk about it every week, but he's at the absolute bottom of the quarterback pool in terms of intended air yards. It's still less than 6 per pass attempt. Like, I mean, it's nothing. And Robert Woods is doing, you know, 90% of his damage after the catch. He gets targeted so often at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, and it hasn't been that much deeper for Kupp. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to be there in abundance against a really, really good Bears defense, an aggressive Bears defense, maybe. But like, the fact that Woods is always going to get 2 or 3 carries and they're not afraid to give him carries near the goal line, like, it doesn't matter what area of the field it is, like, they will give him a handful of carries. That helps him out in no small way.
Looking ahead to Sunday, we got to make some nutty predictions thanks to Planters. What, my friend, Mr. Behrens, is your nuttiest prediction for Sunday's games?
Okay, I know that I have doomed almost every player that I have hyped in any bold prediction segment, whether published or on this podcast all season. I swear I'm going to get this one right. I'm picking this one because there's no way this one fails, and it is Justin Jackson as an RB1. He's facing the Jacksonville defense. Jacksonville is number 28 in run defense on the season. They can't stop anything. They can't stop the pass. They can't stop the run. Jackson absolutely surged past Josh Kelly a couple weeks ago, outsnapped him by a ton, outtouched him 20-12, outgained him by over 50 total yards. He's active as a receiver. He's averaged almost 5 yards per carry for his career. This is a good running back in a spectacular matchup. I think he gives us 100 yards and a touchdown, finishes as a top 12 fantasy running back.
I dig it, Andy, and I hope you're right. My bold prediction is about Tim Patrick, undrafted out of Utah. You know I love a good underdog. The 6'4" and 208-pound wideout has brought trademark physicality and just enough underdog grit. There it is. You know, I had to mention it to the Broncos receiving corps. He is leading this team in targets, 15 over the last 2 weeks. He has either scored or cleared 100 yards or both in 3 consecutive efforts. It's worth noting that his 100 yard and scoring effort in week 6 came versus New England and in the primary coverage of one Stephon Gilmore. Dude is legit. He's the wide receiver one. We know Drew Lock is going to be chasing points in a game against Kansas City. Ironically, fun fact, Tim Patrick managed his first career score while facing the Chiefs back in 2018. So this is good juju. Fire up Tim Patrick. Those were some pretty nutty predictions right there. What can you say? We're a bit nuts. Thanks again to Planters. And we remind you at home or wherever you are, stay satisfied with Planters. All right. Fantasy Football Live, it is coming again, like it does every week, 90 minutes before kickoff. Are you excited about any new segments, Andy?
Oh, I am excited about a new segment, actually.
No
fantasy court this week. We're bringing in a win, place, or show segment. I'm pretty excited about it. It means no fantasy court, at least for a week. So I'll have to just like keep the wig on my lap, pet it throughout the show.
Oh, your comfort animal. Sure thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be sure to check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor. Andy mentioned it earlier in the show. I like to listen as well. You can also check out the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat Forty. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza underscore FF. That is at Andy Behrens. One more thanks to Planters, and Matt and I will be back for the week 7. How are we here? Oh my gosh. It actually feels like 7 years now. Recap on Monday morning.